The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hello, everybody. It's Dennis and Julie, Dennis Prager and Julie Hartman.
Should I say shalom?
Well, we should begin with that. I have so much to say about this letter that you will now read, that you received. Was it addressed to you or to both of us?
I think it was addressed to no one. Or no, it was addressed to me, okay. But they didn't write Dear Julie.
Right. That... We could spend the hour and 15 minutes, the average time span of a Dennis and Julie, just with my reflections on this note. But we won't, obviously, but it's very worthy of noting. So read it?
This is a rare time we even talked about bringing something up immediately. Usually we just...
Yes, I know. Right, exactly.
Something on the wall and it leads to a deep discussion. But yeah, let's read this email. By the way, my email is julie@julie-hartman.com. I get spectacular emails from people.
That's right.
And as I say to Dennis, it shows that we're doing something right if we are attracting such thoughtful listeners. So I deeply appreciate what all of you write to me, even if I can't respond. So this one is from, I'm not going to say his name, I think, if he doesn't want me to, but a man.
Uh-huh.
And here's what he wrote. Hi, I'm sure you're a good and well-meaning person, but please at least consider quitting that shalom or Shabbat shalom routine. Saying it at Whole Foods or on the show, it feels like you're treating Judaism like some sort of silly novelty. That may be partially due to secular Jews' emphasis on comedy or self-deprecation, but don't buy into that, or at least don't talk about it. Thanks.
I assume it's a Jew.
Yes, I would assume so, too.
Okay.
Though he did not say.
I have thought about this for a week.
Yeah, I forwarded it to you. See, I do forward emails that I get to Dennis.
Yeah, you do. So, obviously, as well known, I'm a Jew. I'm a committed Jew, religious Jew, observant Jew, not fully Orthodox, but observant. I care deeply about maintaining... holiness to my religion, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's utterly adorable when you say shalom or Shabbat shalom. And I have no doubt, look, if the person watches us, listens to us, the odds are this is a well-intentioned person of some depth.
Who wrote the email?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I don't begrudge them for writing it. I appreciate it.
So I want to make that clear because what I'm about to say will sound like I'm dismissing him. It's a him. And not dismissing the point. I'm not dismissing the person. I'm dismissing the point. There are so many thoughts I have on this. One is religious people... have a reputation already of being uptight and not real. And that letter, to me, manifests that non-reality uptightedness, whether it's a Christian or a Jew, it doesn't matter. You can't be lighthearted. It's sacrilegious. There is no question there is that element. It is like... I'll give a Christian analogy, and I have mentioned this to you. From the beginning of my radio career, when you only got snail mail, and I would get stacks like this, stacks, and often handwritten, which
Wow.
It was very difficult to plow through. But anyway, there would be undoubtedly every week somebody would write to me, Dennis, you know, I love you, and all the and they did, but I don't understand how you, a religious person, could use God's name in vain.
I got that email recently too,
and I wrote back. And the example is so, and I, the one I always give an example. Oh my God, that I have a tough day at the office. You have used God's name in vain and violated the third of the Ten Commandments, depending on your enumeration of the first five commandments. And I've explained in writing, and I've explained on the air probably 100 times. It saying, oh my God, there was so much traffic today, does not violate that commandment. Mm-hmm. A, God is not God's name. Mm-hmm. That's really important. The name of a president of the United States is the name of the president, not the president. He has a name. One day she'll have a name. Okay. But anyway, that's number one. Number two, it means don't carry God's name. And I explained that.
Right.
Whereas you do bad in God's name and you've really done the cause of God-based ethics, you've shattered it. Because in the name of God, you have done bad. It's bad enough to do bad without God being mm-hmm. invoked. Okay. So anyway, there is a percentage of religious people who are super duper serious, and the levity is, as I said, sort of sacrilegious. Julie Hartman going, Shalom, Shabbat Shalom, is adorable. It is not only not offensive to this religious Jew. First of all, there's nothing holy about those words. It's just Hebrew. Okay, Shabbat is not a holy word, and Shalom is not a holy word. It's just Hebrew words. You're not. If you invoked God's name, I would say, you know, it's... I don't have a 100% acceptance factor.
Right.
But Julie is not Jewish. She comes to Shabbat dinner virtually every week, where I go to Shabbat dinner virtually every week. You fell in love with Shabbat dinner. You love
the Torah.
I'm sorry?
I'm crazy about the Torah.
I'm crazy about the Torah. Wouldn't we Jews, let me ask the letter writer, wouldn't you love it if 100 million Jews walked around going Shalom or Shabbat Shalom? Would we be better off or worse off?
Also, it's just I want people to know why I say it. There's no reason.
That's
like,
right.
It's just
yes.
stupid. It's just silly.
It's the realm of the absurd, which is my favorite humor. But you're not mocking the religion in any way. Forget you, Julie, or not. One doing that is not... There's no mockery involved. It's lightheartedness.
You picked up a phrase
that you enjoy saying. I think it's awesome.
Thank you. That's literally all it is. I don't even think about it.
I was like, why do I say that?
There's no reason.
A Jew hearing you say it should just smile.
Well, I actually realized it comes from when I was in Israel, which was the best trip of my life. And I was at the, I think it's called Carmel Market in Tel Aviv. And it was Shabbat. And... our tour guide said something like, you know, wish people a happy Shabbat. And so I was just walking in Carmel Market going, Shabbat Shalom, Shabbat Shalom, like to all these different people. And they loved it. They were so
exactly.
happy, and they could tell I wasn't Jew. Not that I was, again, the fact I even have to pause and go, not that I was making fun of it. It's so sad that that's even put in my head.
Right.
That I have to say that. Of course I'm not making fun of it. People loved it. They thought it was hilarious. It was just silly. I just like being a goofball. I don't know if people always see that side of me
yes,
on the show, but
and I love
it's just
that
goofball-ness.
Part of you. And I have a strong sense that if the shoe was on the other foot, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
If I were the non-Jew and fell in love with Shabbat or even Judaism and learned that phrase,
And it's such a happy phrase, too. Like, I really, shalom means hello and also means peace. And I just love the alliteration of, I don't say it like every day. It's just something silly, but.
You can say it as long, in my presence, you can say it as often as you want.
But what you said at the beginning, and again, I just want to make something clear to this person who wrote the email. Thank you for writing me the email.
Oh, totally.
I welcome all kinds of emails. I mean, I have.
And I have no doubt we would like you. I just want to make that clear.
Of course.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes. And I actually really love when people challenge me this way because it gets me to think. What was I going to say? Bingo.
Bingo. I would lie. I'm very curious.
That sucks. What was I going to say? I don't know. I'm so sorry. I don't know. I have another thought about something totally unrelated that I could transition us to.
But you did. Yeah, we'll take that. But I am curious. Look, you're saying it is endearing. I'm saying.
Oh, I remembered.
Yeah.
Thank you for stalling for
a minute. Yeah, no, I really wanted you to remember.
Yes. Okay. What you said earlier about religious people tending, not always, of course, tending to be maybe a little bit uptight and formal. I was thinking that as I was recently watching Senator Katie Britt's, I want to call it the Soviet Union. I keep calling the State of the Union the Soviet Union.
That's a perfect
I have never called.
Very
I've
Freudian.
Never made that mistake before, but this one I call it the Soviet Union, which is very Freudian because, as you say, it sort of gave Soviet Union vibes. But so obviously, the left went after Senator Britt, and we're just so upset with her. And then apparently she said something in her response about immigration, about someone being trafficked, and it actually didn't occur under President Biden. The woman she was referring to was trafficked during the presidency of George W. Bush. Anyway, putting that aside, I just brought that up to say that she, you know, I think was unfairly at times maligned by the left. However, I will be honest with you that I was watching that State of the Union response and I was thinking, why? it's so easy. It's so easy to counter President Biden in that State of the Union. And with all due respect to Senator Britt, I'm sure she's a great person. I obviously agree with most of what she says. It was very Stepford Wifey to me. It was very preachy. And it was sort of what I felt was that she was, wittingly or not, being a caricature of what the left thinks conservatives are. And she was in a kitchen, and the whole vibe was just, I was looking at it going, you are giving the left exactly what they want. Someone who seems a bit uptight, someone who seems like very domestic, you know, is trying to play up the domestic vibes. She had this, you know, way of speaking that was very preachy and kind of creepy. And I was just looking at that like, why is this the person who the right chose? Do you think I'm being unfair?
N-O-A. No, N-A-A. Not at all.
Ugh, it
was
drove me crazy. It was so cringy.
I know I would like her personally.
Yes.
But I could not watch the rest of it. I actually turned it off after 10 minutes.
It really felt like self-sabotage.
So I'm now going to reveal something which I'm sure will be used to further dismiss me. But it's a gamble I always take because I just believe in being real.
Mm-hmm.
If I'd have given the response to the Biden speech, it would have blown people out of their minds. It would, you know, and you know why? Not because I'm brighter than everybody else or anything like that. Because I would be real. This is this man stands for, and this is what he said. This is what the man stands for, and this is what he said. And just, I wouldn't necessarily crack a joke. I would be even almost monotonish, and it would be incredibly effective.
Of course.
Real wins the day.
It does. I mean, you would do an excellent job because you're real and you're you. But frankly, an 11-year-old could have given a response to Biden's State of the Union. It was so despicable on so many levels. And it was so, I mean, at many times factually incorrect.
Not despicable, awful.
He was talking about abortion. How he said, "What right are you going to take away next to Republicans?" He said that of the Republicans in the chamber. He went after the Supreme Court. He said, "You know, you guys are going to see
soon." That was
soon.
Unbelievable.
It is. I'm going to double down on this despicable thing to so villainize.
Oh no! Wait. Oh, are you talking about Biden's speech?
Yes.
Oh, I thought about her speech.
No.
Oh, if it was despicable. Dennis Prager here with a man I have come to admire for his work. So when I asked him, "What do you do?" This is the title he gave: wealth architect.
Very simply put, I am a wealth architect that helps my clients accelerate the way they grow your wealth. It's not how much you make, it's how much you keep. The Internal Revenue Code is embedded with a number of things that you can take advantage of. It's what I call playing tax chess. We take the time to play tax chess in your favor. We give our clients unbiased, independent advice across all areas in their financial life because we have no incentive to sell anything.
I was taken enough and impressed enough to have you do my work. And you have, in fact, saved me a serious amount of money. CharlesDombeck.com/Prager.
Right,
Biden's speech was
not
despicable.
Katie Ritz.
Oh,
yeah.
You changed subject.
Forgive me. Okay.
Oh, his speech? He has given, lived a long life. His speeches, his inaugural address, his State of the Union, are the ugliest speeches a president has given in my lifetime, maybe in all of American history. His inaugural address spoke of white supremacists.
I know. So I'm glad we clarified. No, Katie Britz, I would not call despicable.
Yeah, that's why I was surprised.
No. I would call it creepy.
That's right.
But it's just, right. We've talked about this on Dennis and Julie, but I really take your point that people need to realize whether it's fair or not. Many people have assumptions about them and have stereotypes about them. If you're religious, if you're conservative.
Right, you want to work against
it. And you want to work against that. And by the way, that doesn't mean that you compromise your values. That doesn't mean you hide your religion.
Yes.
That doesn't mean you hide your conservatism. That is not what I am saying. But what I am saying is that maybe if there's this stereotype that those on the right are, you know, Stepford wifey, you know, women in the home, not like, maybe you shouldn't have Senator Katie Britt in a kitchen as she's delivering the State of the Union response.
That's right.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
But it's just, it's not. And
right.
Yeah, it was.
Well, it
really
sort
upset
of,
me.
Look, she was put up to that. It wasn't her idea, I suspect. And it reminds me of what I said when I became a Republican.
Oh, yeah. I love this line.
I left the bad party for the stupid party.
Yeah, as Ben Shapiro says, the Republican Party has a fantastic ability to just kick itself in the nuts over and over and over. I mean, as I often say, if Donald Trump just got up and said, you know, five things, crime, even if he literally like said these five things, not in a sentence, just kept rattling off issues, crime, border, fentanyl, DEI, public schools, China,
trans,
Israel, Ukraine. If he literally just went on a rotation saying those one words, he'd get elected. But so can I tell you this other thing I wanted to bring up?
Yes.
Okay. It actually does have to do with Katie Britt. So on my show Timeless, which by the way, just want to give a quick shout out. I would love if you would tune in live. It's live Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern. And I have Sean on the air with me. Like, he pops up and we have these great discussions.
Do you consider that a positive?
Like 90% of the time I consider it a positive. No, sometimes I'm like, well, why did I do this? But you can call into the show and we've had great calls, or you can write in the chat and I read a lot of the chat. Anyway, we were on Timeless Live about a week ago and we were talking about the State of the Union and Katie Britt's response. And I said, as much as I agree that this Katie Britt response was a disaster, why is it that there seem to be no limits that the left can go to in terms of inhumanity, destruction, irrationality, etc.? But then Senator Katie Britt gives a very poor, you know, State of the Union response, and everyone's focusing their attention on that, and they view it as a total indictment of conservatism and republicanism. Like, why is there this double standard? We literally have on the left people making kids into furries. We have kids in schools who are barking and are drinking out of, like, dog cups because they think they're dogs. We have people who are murderers being let out on supervised release because of cash bail policy. But that's not an indictment of the left, right? But then if a religious man has an affair, it's an indictment on all of Christianity. If someone on the right does something stupid, it's an indictment of all of Republicanism. It's a double standard. So I asked on my show, why is this? And literally as I said it, I thought of the answer. And the answer is, this is the cost of having principles. When you have principles and you stake your claim to something, whether you're a conservative and you want to conserve the principles of the American founding, or you're a Christian and you accept, you know, Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, etc., you are very clearly showing people what it is that you believe. And so when you don't live up to that, it's a very stark contrast of you're not living up to your stated principles. Whereas on the left, and you always make this distinction, which I appreciate, between liberals and leftists. I'm speaking about leftists, not liberals. But on the left, they by definition do not have principles. They adhere to DEI, to intersectionality. I put up this slide from a California public school curriculum up on my show, and it shows this intersectionality chart where they're encouraging kids to judge people based on subjectivity, on immutable characteristics, and where they stack on the oppressor versus oppressed, you know, complex. So by definition, they don't have principles. And so when they do something...
Well, why isn't DEI a principle?
Because diversity, equity, and inclusion. What is diversity? What are the principles of diversity?
You mean they don't have personal principles?
No, I don't.
They
I don't,
have macro principles.
No, they don't.
Diversity is not diversity of thought.
It's not diversity if it's a black conservative. It's not diversity anymore. If, you know.
Right. So forgive me.
No, please. I appreciate.
I have believed what you have said all of my life. My way of putting your point, that's why I use the word personal, that you always encounter right-wing hypocrites, quote-unquote, mm-hmm. conservative hypocrites, Christian hypocrites, religious hypocrites. Did you ever hear the term left-wing hypocrite? Because it can't be.
Because you're progressing.
Because they don't have... No, because you're... Because there is no standard
right.
by which they could be judged hypocritical.
Yes. They're progressive. They can always say, I'm progressing, right. I'm changing. There's no, you know, standard.
But so we are at their mercy, if you will. We sin. Hypocrite.
Yes.
I would like... any listener to us right now to think of a left-wing hypocrite.
Well,
who has been charged with hypocrisy by the mainstream media who's on the left?
But this is where I want to go back to your challenge of me about principles. What are their principles? They say diversity, but that's a word.
Well, that's why I said that personal that doesn't exist, but they have global principles, not... Emitting carbon is a principle
but
for the left.
But see, that's not true. That's not true.
Oh, because they jet in on their private jets to
Absolutely.
Davos.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. They're never called out on that.
We get oil from Venezuela and from Saudi Arabia, so it's fine when they're emitting carbon over there and sending it to us, but then we're just not going to do it here because of a political purpose. They don't have principles. And it's not – I'm not talking about liberals. I'm talking about leftists. I mean, again, okay, they'll say their principle is protecting women, you know, defending, amplifying female voices. But they don't even think there's any such thing as a woman. They – you know, like they – at least on the right, and trust me, I believe the Republican – I'm going to speak about conservatism, not the Republican Party. But at least with conservatism, even if you disagree with those principles, there are clearly stated principles that we're trying to conserve. But on the left, again, I'd be very willing to hear if someone has a challenge. They claim to have them, but they really don't. And their definitions of these things change.
When you think about it, what is the excuse for demanding that that people keep their home at a certain temperature, but when you attend an international left-wing conference like WEF,
mm-hmm.
World Economic Forum, or any of the myriad global warming conferences, mm-hmm. and you fly in using more energy with that flight than someone does in a year,
yes,
that's not an issue. So how do you explain that? So your explanation is they don't really have those principles.
They don't. They do not have principles. And I just want to by definition, they don't. By definition, because look at intersectionality. That is literally, by definition, not having principles, not judging people
that's
based
good.
On
that's
an equal
that's
principle.
That's how you could have queers for Palestine.
Well, right.
Because there were no queers among Palestinians who survive.
Right.
Whereas the biggest Pride Day in the Middle East is in Israel.
I'm thinking of this chart that I showed on my show from a California public high school, and they have this they have Beyonce in the center, and they have these lines going out from Beyonce, and the blue lines indicate her privilege, that she's rich and heterosexual, and the red lines indicate her oppression, that she's black and she's a woman. That is, by definition, judging people subjectively. It is judging people based on their immutable characteristics and trying to fit it into your definition of privileged and oppressed. And it changed, and we saw this after October 7th. Jews, for some time, at least among some, count as oppressed. And then once October 7th happened, they didn't count as oppressed anymore because it was against who the left saw as more oppressed. So they claim to have these principles, but they're changing. And I indeed think, by definition, they're subjective.
Okay, that's fair. But, and back to your, to remind people of your original point, that's why there's only referred to as, the only reference is made to Republican or conservative hypocrites, not Democratic or left-wing or even liberal hypocrites.
Yes, and so when...
So you're for women, but if men compete against women, then you're not for women.
Yes.
Or you're not a hypocrite. You're just a progressive.
Exactly.
No, I'm sustaining your point.
Yes, there's always room on the left to change and to say, oh, well, that, you know, I moved on, or that wasn't sufficient, et cetera. But it's sort of like when you stake your claim to principles on the right and you don't live up to them, it's like a person who says that they want to run a mile in 10 minutes and they don't. That person is judged as not having run the mile in 10 minutes, but no one considers the people who never even wanted to run the mile in 10 minutes, you know? There's just more stark of a comparison. But you asked a few seconds ago, like, why do you think, I think we were talking about the carbon, the private
yeah.
plane thing. Why do you think there's that hypocrisy?
Yeah, go on.
I don't think that, I actually think we're giving them too much credit, leftists that is, by calling them hypocrites. Because when you're a hypocrite...
Right, at least you really hold the value.
Yes.
Yeah.
At least you're trying to live
yeah,
up to something,
right,
but
you're
don't
you're
fill
just,
it.
You have human weakness.
Yes.
Right.
But when you were asking why, I think that many people now are just acting in bad faith. They know exactly what they're doing. I really believe they do. Some people, I'm talking about people at the top, politicians.
Which people, that reminds
they know
me.
What they're
I
doing.
Was listening to your Timeless with Julie the other day.
That's nice that you were listening with
yes,
Timeless with Julie.
Absolutely. And you were on with What's His Name.
With What's His Name.
And the subject arose where you said, I differ with Dennis and Sean. I got a big kick out of that. So Dennis and Sean think that the leftists believe their lies.
Yes.
Like men give birth.
Yes.
Okay? If that's not a lie, or that the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation. I mean, if you want a list of lies, that big lies, I don't mean everybody is guilty at some point of some little lie, but these are gigantic. And they say these things, like men give birth. So let's analyze that. A leftist says men give birth. Men menstruate. And It's totally fair for a biological male to compete against women in women's sports. Totally fair.
Mm-hmm.
You say that they don't believe it. I'm not even arguing with you. I just want to understand your position.
I think that most people don't believe it. I think there are some, especially young people, who are truly brainwashed and do believe it. But I think most people, especially the politicians who are saying that, they don't believe it.
Oh, right. I agree about older people saying it. I think younger people believe it.
I think some do. I think a lot don't.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I want you correctly noted that I have wrestled with that my whole life. How do you reconcile science and the statement men give birth? Do you know that a hospital, I was reading this recently, a hospital referred to women in its documents as persons with vaginas?
Yeah. If you're still waiting to buy gold, sitting on the sidelines could cost you precious gains. This is Julie Hartman for AmFed Coin and Bullion, Dennis's choice for precious metals. The current economic climate could make buying gold a very desirable, safe haven commodity. The government's overprinting of money, the fluctuation of interest rates, and high inflation can impact the value of gold, and why you should seriously consider buying now. Dennis has been working with AmFed Coin and Bullion's owner, Nick Grovich, for years, and he's glad that he jumped into the precious metals market when he did. Nick has been in the industry for over 42 years, and he's proud of providing transparency and fair pricing to build long-term relationships. Nick and his team have always had Dennis's back. They recommend what is in his best interest, not theirs. And Dennis says he doesn't worry about hidden commissions or huge markups. If you're interested in buying or selling, call AmFed Coin and Bullion for a free coin performance review. 1-800-221-7694. What are you waiting for? AmericanFederal.com, AmericanFederal.com.
A hospital referred to women in its documents as persons with vaginas.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, this is everywhere.
Well, that was a new one for me. I have to say. Yeah. Birthing persons, I was familiar with.
Egg producers.
I have not heard egg producers.
I have.
You have?
Mm-hmm. It's so insulting.
Well, I mean, I'm just curious. Do they ever define men as possessors of testicles? No, I'm not being cute. Is what's good for the goose good for the gander? I don't know.
It's a good point. I've never heard that. Maybe some do.
I didn't think of it till I posed the question, mm-hmm. and you answered it. It's another reason that progressives have contempt for women and every group they actually speak on behalf of, every group. Because they don't do that with men. They don't say possessors of penises.
Oh, this is a total war on women are being
right,
harmed.
Right, but reducing a woman to the possessor of a vagina, and they don't do the same to men.
Yep.
This just literally occurred to me in real time as we're talking.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't they do that?
Well, a cynic would say that they don't like women.
Yeah, that they may like them. They have contempt for them. They have contempt for blacks that I've shown every week in for 40 years. I want to develop that for a moment, though. Let us say that Hospital X would describe men as persons with testicles. My hunch is they would become a laughingstock.
Hmm.
Whereas persons with vaginas, they're not laughed at as much. You can reduce women and be taken seriously, but reducing men, oddly
it's
enough.
So true.
I mean,
so why do you think that is?
Subliminally, they take men more seriously. if you say that there's no such thing as a woman, but there is such a thing as one who possesses a vagina, you have reduced women in such a dramatic form that it's utterly insulting, utterly.
Yes.
And they wouldn't, they don't level the same degree of insult to men.
Well, you just said that you have demonstrated every week on your show for 40 years why many on the left have contempt for blacks. I think, to your point, one of the greatest examples of that is, and this is something I've also been talking about on Timeless a lot, you know, 97% of black homicide victims are killed by other blacks. I actually think it's more. I think it's like 99%, but let's call it 97%. Nobody cares, generally. So of course, some people do, but I'm saying, you know, woke people, the mainstream media, like an 8-year-old girl was shot the other day, an 8-year-old black girl by another black person in Chicago. Nobody cares. But then when a white person kills a black person, media, headlines, outrage, etc. And that is very morally unsettling to me because it's like, wait a minute, do those black lives not matter because they were killed by other black people?
Yes.
The black lives only matter when they're killed by white people?
Yes.
That is messed up. And
it's because they don't care about blacks.
They don't.
They hate whites.
Well,
they don't care. 60,000, I believe, is the number. Blacks have been murdered by Muslims in West Africa since the year 2000. That's just 24 years. 60,000. Including children, including raped women. Not including raped women. They're just raped and they're kept for more rape. And not a word. No black organization gives a damn about you. You know why? Because they're being killed by Muslims who are black.
They're not useful to them.
Not useful.
Not useful.
That's why I say the world doesn't care about Palestinians. They hate Israel.
Absolutely. And this is what really frosts my cookies. I watch people
talk. 1 minute. Frosts your cookies?
Yeah, have you never heard that?
Sean, have you ever heard that phrase?
Only from Julie.
No, it's a common phrase.
In the Hartman household.
Maybe it's a Hartman thing. I don't think it is. Look it up.
Frosts my cookies.
Yes.
What does that mean? I'm sorry.
Like, cookies are good and they become frost. Like, this is what really, like...
makes them even better?
So no, this is like worse.
Frosting on cookies makes them worse?
Look it up.
Are you serious about those phrases?
That's what she means by frost my cookies.
Wait.
I'm looking
this up.
Does
the internet have frost my cookies? I'm sorry to interrupt.
I know it's important.
No, it does not.
It does not.
What? It doesn't? Something that isn't. Wait, I have it. Urban Dictionary. I have it right here.
What does it say?
Frost my cookies. Something that is annoying that you off. It frosts my cookies when random people talk about me.
Okay, fine. What? I'm just trying to analyze the phrase. What is wrong with frosting a cookie?
See,
I mean, it renders my cookies inedible. That would be fine. All right, go ahead. What frosts your cookies?
I'm going to follow up with this.
Yes, what frosts your cookies?
I'm not going to say that anymore. Here's what really...
I like it, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to get an email. Why are you saying that? Stop saying shalom. Stop saying frost cookies. Anyway, here's what really annoys me. People talk so much in this country about slavery and how we have to atone for the moral sin that the United States engaged in by having slaves 150 years ago. Newsflash, people, there's still slavery today. And we still, maybe we're, you know, people in the United States don't have them on their plantations and are whipping them, but we are using slave labor every single day of our lives. Look at this iPhone, or any phone.
The batteries of electric cars
are, and you see these videos of people in the Congo, and they are in the worst conditions. They are barefoot. They are shoveling. You know, it is so horrible. And it's like, you know what? I'm sorry. I was listening to Don Lemon the other day talk about slavery. You don't give a damn about slavery. You just give a damn about what you can froth up, so as to work for your political benefit. And it benefits you to talk about the legacy of American slavery is ever present in 2024. And you don't give a damn that according to the Global Slavery Institute, there are 50 million slaves right now in the world. If you really cared about slavery, you would care about slavery. And I'll go a step further. Right now, we have terrible gang violence, by some reports, cannibalism in Haiti, but no one cares because it's non-white people killing and harming non-white people. To your point about Israel, the reason why there's so much attention focused right now on Israel and Gaza is because it's very easy for them to go white country oppressing non-white country.
Even though it's a lie, because most of Israel's not white.
Right.
But it doesn't matter, obviously.
It's gross. It's really gross.
What was the? I wanted to say something, but I didn't want to interrupt you. Your example, right before Israel, was
slaves.
Yes, I know. And Haiti.
And Haiti.
Well, the larger point has been made by both of us. It is the group that they hate. It is not right and wrong. It is
right.
Who do we want? Oh, yes, I know what I wanted to say. When you mentioned Don Lemon and the legacy of slavery, so slavery ended in 1865, so that's 150 years ago, essentially, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a lot of time, 150 years. The Holocaust...
I know, oh, gosh.
...ended 80 years ago. But when the Holocaust ended 1 year before, did Jews go around slaughtering Germans or non-Jews in general because they didn't come to their aid in the Holocaust? When I hear defenses of Hamas and their atrocities, and the Palestinians have been committing atrocities for all of my lifetime. They murdered the entire Israeli Olympic team in Munich, the Munich Olympics in 1972. And how many people your age know that? It's close to zero. Let's be honest. Or they burned that, well, it wasn't Palestinians, but ISIS, that burned that Jordanian soldier alive in a cage. I mean, it doesn't bother people. And what they say is, oh, look, they have been oppressed by Israel for all these years. You know, it's a pressure cooker letting the pressure out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why didn't Jews massacre people after the Holocaust? There isn't one instance that I am aware of Jews doing that. Isn't that important? Why isn't that an important thing to note?
Yes, and, you know, we don't talk about the legacy of the Holocaust. And of course, people would say that the Holocaust didn't occur in our own country, but the Holocaust was far more recent than American slavery was. But
yes,
you don't hear people discussing that.
More egregious. There are levels of evil. If you'd have asked me, would you be willing to be a slave or would you like to be tortured to death in Auschwitz? With a slave, there's hope. There's no hope if your whole family. What I'm saying is so politically incorrect because the left loathes truth. It doesn't only tell lies. It loathes truth.
It really does.
Slavery is vicious. And by the way, there are levels of evil in slavery. Arab slavery was more vicious than Western slavery because they castrated the male so that they wouldn't reproduce. Whereas many blacks, not all by any means, but many blacks did have families, mm-hmm. did have progeny. It was a terror. So then you will get every leftist who hears this, who is going to announce Prager defended slavery.
I know.
That is what they do.
Well, it ironically proves your exact point that, what did you just say? They have contempt for the truth.
Yes, they
loathe
contempt,
the truth.
They loathe the truth.
I mean, look at the whole bloodbath thing with Donald Trump that he was giving a speech recently.
Right.
And
yes.
They plucked out when he said,
right.
They
Everyone
loathe
knows.
The
and,
truth.
And then some network provided all... Not all, a handful of examples of leftists using the word bloodbath having nothing to do with murder.
Right. But this greater...
By the way, it's said in sports. Oh, my God. It was a bloodbath.
All the time.
They scored 6 goals.
So Donald Trump was talking about electric vehicles in China, and they're basically dominating the market when he used that term. And by the way, this Breitbart dug this up. A Chinese EV manufacturer said that that it's going to be a bloodbath in the United States.
Oh, that's a riot.
He said that. He said, yes. If we keep working hard, yes, it's going to be a bloodbath
right
for them.
Did he mean people shooting people?
Of course. Right. So, but this greater point, once you see it, I always say when I became conservative, it was like I didn't know I was in a dark room, but someone flipped the light switch on for me. And then
Well, that's brilliant. You didn't know you were in a dark room.
But then someone...
But the light did go on.
The light came on, and yes, then I went, whoa, I was in a dark room, and now I know what's here. And if you turn the light switch back off for me, I now know I'm in a dark room, and I know the truth. But anyway, once you see this point that we're making about selective outrage, about not caring about the names or the groups in...
In whose name
you were talking about taking the Lord's name in vain. They right, they take every group's that name in vain.
Well said.
Literally every group. But once you see that, you can't unsee that. I'll give you another prime example, which is just despicable, really. Illegal immigrants are prioritized, valued in the United States right now by many on the left, far more than citizens. And the greatest example is President Biden apologizing to Laken Riley's murderer for calling him an illegal immigrant. He was not apologizing to the victim and her family. He was not apologizing for the policies which led to her murder. But he was apologizing to a murderer who was not a citizen of this country.
Saying illegal immigrant.
Right. And meanwhile, I profiled this on my show. Veteran homelessness increased by 7% from 2022 to 2023. Homelessness in general in the United States increased 12%. But it's illegal immigrants who are getting hotels and prepaid debit cards in New York City. And it's because they want to lure in many illegal immigrants to these sanctuary cities to count them in the census. And of course, I think there are some people with good intentions. They want to help those illegal immigrants who are destitute. I have enormous sympathy for many of these immigrants. None of this of what I'm saying is vilifying illegal immigrants. I do think they should come to this country lawfully, but many of them are fleeing terribly destitute situations. What I am saying is despicable is that we have the president of the United States and many in his party who are prioritizing the needs of non-citizens over citizens because it's politically advantageous to them. It's not just with women. It's not just with blacks. It's in every category, every single one. Are you ready to lose weight but not sure where to start? Let me tell you why Dennis chose PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition. First, he says Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. The program is science-based. The PhD program starts with nutrition, but as Dennis says, there is so much more. They know that 90% of permanent change comes from the mind. And they work on eliminating the reasons you gained this weight in the first place. There aren't any shortcuts, pills, injections, just solid, science-based nutrition and behavior. Dennis says he has seen results over several weeks. If you're ready to lose weight for the last time, call 1-864-644-1900 to get started or online at myphdweightloss.com. Do what Dennis did and just make the appointment for your one-on-one consultation call today. That's 864-644-1900. But I wish more people would see that they are being manipulated and that the people who claim to care about them don't give a damn about them.
People believe what the society says. There are not many who challenge the default. I love that term. The default position of the human being is to act sheep-like. You know, when I see it, I don't know if I ever told you this. I think a lot can be learned about human nature on the road. Very often in big cities, such as we live in, there are two left-hand turn lanes on a street, right? You're mm-hmm. familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I come to work every day, there's one dramatic example onto a major thoroughfare, and there are two left-lane turns. I'm trying to be completely non-exaggerated in my speech. You will see 8 cars in the right-hand left lane, and 2 in the other, and the next guy who's going to make a left will join the other 8 when there are only 2 in the other
one. So true. That's so accurate.
But it's a,
I've noticed that too.
Oh, good. Oh, I'm
you
glad.
Think
so you never heard me
with,
say this.
No.
No, what you do is we are programmed to do what others do. That is the program of human nature. I'm not blaming people. I'm just noting that is the way in which it works. So if everybody around you says men give birth, you will say men give birth. You will. That's your left-hand turn lane. It is very hard to think, is there another left-hand turn lane? Or even worse, you see the other and you think there must be something wrong
That's what I was just saying. And sometimes I even think that when I'm going, why are so many people in this lane but not in that one?
Right.
I'm going to go with what other people are doing.
Okay, that's right. That's the default position. It's to your credit that you note that. And by the way, you are not sheep-like in your behavior.
Well, thank you. Maybe in my driving behavior.
No. Well, now, all you need is one alert. You will not do that again.
No, I won't.
I know that. I know you.
I won't. But I've been aware of it. That is funny. You're right. The driving does reveal a lot. I mean,
oh, driving when people again. So we'll take another example. 20 cars, 15 cars are lined up to make a right-hand turn. Okay? And you know you have to make a right-hand turn at that light or at that stop sign. And you think, huh, do I join the 15 or do I sneak in at third?
Mm.
So I am as in much a rush as anybody.
Yes,
so
you are.
But I would never do that.
Right.
I joined the line. That's not sheep-like. That's decency. Because the second lane is not a right-hand turn lane. And yet there are people who see it. They zoom up ahead and then turn on their signal and go in. So my question is, this is why I say I'd love to interview these people and why I do believe the road is a microcosm of life, just like the left-hand turn lane was to you just now. And I want to interview them, but I just want to ask, in the most non-judgmental way I could possibly pose the question, do you think you are more important than the 11 people lined up in the right-hand turn lane?
You know the answer.
What? No, I don't know the answer.
Yes, of course.
You think they think yes?
Yes.
No, I. It is inconceivable to me that they would look me in the eye and say, I am more important than those other people.
No, they would say my needs in that moment were more important
than the other needs. So remember, I said, are you more important?
But that is thinking of yourself as more important because you are not considering the
other
needs.
Well, no, if you have to get to a hospital, then your need is more important.
Right, but we're not talking about those people. Those wouldn't be the people, I mean, maybe they would, but those wouldn't be the people you'd interview. Everybody would understand.
My needs and me are not the same. I don't agree with you on that. But...
Yeah, you know, I do think they think they're more important. I really do.
Okay,
they're arrogant and they're like,
that
these
is
peons,
why
I'm
I would
turn.
Ask them. That's the reason I want to ask them that question.
You know, another microcosm of the human existence, airplanes and airplane etiquette and behavior. I'm always interested when people, and we've talked about this, the way people dress. I mean, I wear sweatpants and a sweatshirt on the plane because you're so, you know, packed in there. You want to be comfortable. And also it's just disgusting. I don't want to wear nice clothes on a plane. So when I'm talking about how people dress, I may differ with you because I don't really care if people dress casually on airplanes. But when people have smelly clothing or when they, as happened to me on a flight recently, pull out a big hamburger on the tray and start eating the hamburger and ketchup is falling down onto their forearm and I'm like scooting away. How many more hours? Oh, 5 hours. Oh, amazing. You know, but with those people, I want to turn to them and I want to go, do you know that you're grossing me out and you don't care? do you not know that you're grossing me out? And are you a socially inept human being? What is going
on
here?
I
just wouldn't do that to someone next to
correct.
Me.
Correct. About to a certain little extent, I will exonerate them, and I'll tell you why. Seats in coach, which is where you sit. No, this is yes, really important. Do you know people, even to start before the gross out eating?
Yeah.
People in first class are dressed nicer.
True. Totally true.
When you're a sardine, you act like a sardine.
Absolutely. That is 100% it. That's what my thing on airplanes. In a way, I do blame them because it grosses me out, but you kind of can't blame them because they are treated terribly.
Yes.
We are treated like we're cattle being hurled into...
Even in coach.
Right.
First of all, you're literally may not be old enough to know this. Have you ever seen a meal served in coach? Not you could buy a meal for $10 or whatever.
On an international flight, okay, yes, but yeah, not domestic.
You have to. You'll starve to death. Okay, no. Right, but not on a domestic flight.
Yeah, I don't remember that ever.
It was a given. You got a hot meal in coach. You had the room to pull down the tray and eat it.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done, you don't even need to do experiments, but they've done so many experiments keeping mice in a very tight area, and they act violent as a result. People need space. And I don't mean the space, you know, I don't want to see my wife for 3 hours. I need to work on my woodwork, which is a great subject, by the way.
Woodwork?
No.
Or not seeing your wife
space
for 3 hours.
From your spouse.
Oh.
I've done this on the male-female
hour. Yeah.
That is a... I'm just curious. Then we can go back to this. Do you think you will want space from your husband?
Yes.
Very interesting.
I want space from everyone.
Yeah.
You need space.
Yeah, I don't feel that.
Huh.
I'm okay being with Sue all the time. I think I'm atypical. I think most people, I'm not judging anything here at all.
Right.
Because human nature is human nature. I was just curious about you. I didn't know what you would say.
It's hard to say when I am not married, you know? It's hard to...
Right, I know.
I can imagine being with someone who's so easy, and in the same way as with you and Sue, it's just easy to be around them. But I want to go back for a moment, but we should actually talk about
that.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
The spouse thing.
Though the space thing
right,
in general.
Right, the space with the spouse, right. But I want to go back to this airplane thing because it's so important. And it dovetails nicely with your point about imitation. If society sets standards, some people will not live up to the standards. But you need to. People will not meet standards if you don't set them. We see this going on right now in schools, where in many schools they've gotten rid of discipline codes because, you know, they think it's racist or something, and some schools have gotten rid of grades because they think it's racist, etc. When you are taking away discipline standards and grade standards, what you're essentially saying to that person is, I don't respect you. I think that you should just be able to do whatever you want and be a heathen. When you're setting standards, you respect someone. And like on an airplane too, when they are treating you like garbage, when the flight attendants are rude, when the seat is disgusting and has no space, they're essentially saying to you, I don't care about you. So you in turn are going to mimic and send back
that behavior.
Well, that
was my point. Sardines will act like sardines.
Right, but this is, I'm trying to macroize this, not just on an airplane. This is in every case, in a job, in a school,
where
in
you,
a home.
If you don't make demands,
if you don't set standards,
nothing to live up to.
There's nothing to live up to, yes.
No, that's clear.
And it also dovetails nicely with our point about principles. You know, when conservatives don't live up to their principles, it's very starkly identified that they're a hypocrite. But that's better than having no standards and no principles. That's why so much on the left is just chaos, because you're not expecting anything of people. You're not putting down rules and boundaries.
What is it? Somebody said something to the effect, hypocrisy is the compliment that sin pays to virtue.
Say that one more time.
I don't know if I'm saying it correctly, but the point is excellent. Hypocrisy means, well, there really are standards, and I'm not living by them, even though I preach them. That's better than no standards.
Well, so recently...
It's infinitely better.
Totally. Recently, this was really hammered home to me when I had a meeting with a priest, because as we know from very recent Dennis and Julie's, I am struggling right now with God. I believe in God. I would call myself an ethical monotheist, but denominationally, I don't know where I am. But I'm trying to explore. And so many listeners, Jewish and Christian, have been writing into me trying to help me on the journey. And as I said, I can't respond to all of them, but they're so lovely and very deep. But anyway, I went to meet with a Catholic priest, and I just sat there for an hour and a half and asked him all of my questions about Christianity. And I was just, I mean, I wasn't rude at all, but I was rapid fire, you know, like, why do you need Christ to be saved? Why is Christ necessary for forgiveness? Why can't you just appeal to God for forgiveness? Why do you need the mechanism of Christ? We got talking about Adam and Eve and the serpent, and, you know, why God already put the proclivity of temptation into Adam and Eve to take the fruit, but then why did he also have to put in the serpent to further tempt them and lure them? Anyway, it was just a big theological discussion. And as I was sitting there, I so appreciated that he was fielding all these very difficult questions, but he was standing for something. And that is so cool, because so often in society, you just see people criticize, tear down. This guy, you know, I love calling a priest, this holy father priest, he was defending something. And even when at times his answers didn't quite make sense to me, or when I didn't fully agree with them, it was so nice and worthy of such respect.
That is the temptation that a lot of young people have toward a BLM or the pro-Hamas riots or demonstrations. They believe in something. I was raised to believe in nothing. You can't believe in nothing, so it's tempting.
But the thing that they're believing...
Yeah. What's the actual phrase? Really? To Christopher Hitchens? Oh, I was close. Dennis Prager here with a man I have come to admire for his work. So when I asked him, what do you do? This is the title he gave, Wealth Architect.
Very simply put, I am a wealth architect that helps my clients accelerate the way they grow your wealth. It's not how much you make, it's how much you keep. The Internal Revenue Code is embedded with a number of things that you can take advantage of. It's what I call playing tax chess. We take the time to play tax chess in your favor. We give our clients unbiased, independent advice across all areas in their financial life because we have no incentive to sell anything.
I was taken enough and impressed enough to have you do my work. And you have, in fact, saved me a serious amount of money. CharlesDombeck.com/Prager. Hypocrisy is the compliment vice pays to
see,
virtue.
I thought that he was talking about Christopher Hitchens said frost my cookies, and I got really excited.
Too bad. I thought it was William Buckley who came up with it, actually. But Christopher Hitchens, yeah.
But the thing that people are believing in, as you said BLM as an example, they're actually not believing in anything. Because BLM doesn't believe in anything. They think,
right.
I hear your point that they have a community.
The rioters on their behalf, they thought they were. I mean, the entire circus of adoration of George Floyd, that a president of the United States would attend his eulogy. I mean,
or would give the eulogy?
It was all, Huh?
Did he give the eulogy?
No, I don't know if he gave it or attended it at the funeral. Mm. I mean, as it turns out, the odds are overwhelming he wasn't even killed by the policeman. He was killed while under the policeman's knee, but the policeman's knee, it was standard procedure for keeping criminals, alleged criminals, suspects, under control if they were wild. And you don't suffocate with a knee at the side of your neck. But remember, truth is not a left-wing value. So even the coroner's, you know the coroner's report was changed?
I do know that, yes. And here's the thing about, we also live in a society where people think that it's a binary. Either you totally endorse the actions of Derek Chauvin, or, you know, you are totally like in the BLM camp that George Floyd was murdered by Derek Chauvin. The truth is, I don't want to say somewhere in the middle, but the truth isn't binary, if that makes sense. Like, I do not, looking at that video, and I saw the video before, George Floyd was not, as to use your point, wild. He was not behaving wildly. He wasn't resisting.
Not at that moment.
Not at that moment. Not right. at that moment. He was not resisting, and I just think it was totally not necessary for them to do that. However, that is true, but it is also true that the overwhelming evidence is that George Floyd did not die as a result of the knee to the neck,
well,
but because of the
more,
overdose.
The overwhelming majority of evidence was not that a white policeman went to kill a black suspect.
Right, right.
That's the gigantic lie of the riots.
But this point about truth, I think, is really important because people so succumb to these binaries, and they think by acknowledging that the knee to the neck didn't kill George Floyd means that you don't think that there was anything wrong with that whole situation.
Right. That's the position you're put into.
That you have to choose, and that's not the truth. And that's right. Why I'm comfortable speaking the truth, because as I always say, the truth is decent. You know?
Yeah, it's a really nice line. Rochefoucauld. I think that's the guy. So Hitchens took it from someone. Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
But people don't understand, back to the priest point, how hard it is to stand for something. It's very I talk about this with education. You know, a lot of essay prompts that I would get in high school and college were all about novelty and critique. Like, what's your intervention in the way that this author deals with X? Or what, you know, assess the author's, you know, the extent to which the author succeeded at da 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 da. But it's always you're criticizing. They want you to intervene and critique. And imagine if we were given a prompt, build something up. Tell us why you like a certain author. Tell us why you like a certain policy, and, you know, defend something. It always struck me as so arrogant. Like, here I am reading like Nathaniel Hawthorne, and I'm like this 14-year-old who's like not read, you know.
It's a very important
point. It's so arrogant. It's like, oh, I'm the 14-year-old. I'm going to be criticizing Nathaniel Hawthorne.
So
what the hell do I
love
know?
This. Did I ever tell you my reaction when they lowered the voting age to 18?
Yeah, you did, but
I said it to my girlfriend, because it happened when I was in college, I believe. But I do remember saying to her, mm-hmm. Why are they giving me the vote? I don't know anything.
Absolutely. you're right, it is 18. Yeah. Driving age is 16, but
right.
The vote.
It puzzled me. Here's a great subject for a future D&J. Just out of that. So this is not self-praise. It's praise of this way of living. My instinct is not ever, is it good for me? My instinct, so I don't even take that much credit for it, is it good? Is it good for me is not the same thing as is it good. It might have been good for me to get the vote. Oh, look how important I am. Whatever, my choice will matter as much as a 50-year-old. But was it good for the country? No. It was bad for the country to lower the voting age.
Right.
The ability to look at your life from outside of yourself is one of the greatest gifts you can develop or have instinctively. When the coach of my high school team, at the last cuts of the varsity basketball team, announced, "Our high school is in bad shape this year. We really scraped the bottom of the barrel. Prager made the team." So my reaction was so healthy, and I've told this story so often, and I thank God or nature that I have this nature. My reaction was, he is an a-hole for saying it publicly, but he's 100% right. Putting me on the team meant you scraped the bottom of the barrel. I knew that was a fact.
Right.
I didn't ask, am I hurt? I asked, is it true? And that's rare. And it's totally not a boast because I don't take any credit for it. That's the way I'm built. But that's what people should aspire to. And we have the opposite. People are hurt when they shouldn't be hurt. I mean, I had a right to be hurt, and I wasn't hurt.
Right.
But people are hurt when they don't even have a right to be hurt. There have been times on the radio where someone will say, you know, I find that offensive. I go, and there's nothing I can do. It's not offensive. Offensive is not a 100% subjective term. There might be valid reasons to be offended and invalid reasons to be offended.
Absolutely. I'm so afraid to use that term offended nowadays, even when it's legitimate, because it's so been hijacked. But I love this point about seeing things outside of yourself. I had that thought when I was 14 and I was like being asked to criticize Nathaniel Hawthorne.
Who
I was
am
like,
I, 14-year-old Julie, to render judgment over Nathaniel Hawthorne?
It was so, it was like,
that's right.
It was crazy to me.
And you were right.
And it's,
by the way, we were never asked that. This is all new.
Oh,
never.
I believe you.
What did Hawthorne want to say here? What is the lesson to be drawn from Shakespeare's Macbeth?
That's so cool.
What do you feel about it? They just couldn't give a damn what I felt about it, and they were right.
Well, they, at least with my education, it wasn't so, well, yeah, I guess it was, how do you feel about it? But it was also, yeah, it was, because
yes.
it was like, identify how women are, and that's basically like how you, you know, when you're
right.
writing about the way women are dealt with and Nathaniel Hawthorne's whatever, it's, yeah, no, I take your point. But I remember being 14 years old and thinking, I first need to know why this is good before I can say what is bad.
Good.
How? No, but seriously,
it's
asinine. How do you know if something's
right.
bad if you don't know if it's good? How do you know if something's good? Like, you
right.
need...
You don't
why
know a
is
foul
this...
ball if you don't know a fair ball.
Yeah, I wish my teacher would tell me why this is on our list, why this is a quality book,
right.
what Nathaniel Hawthorne does spectacularly well and whatever, or where the teacher sees some, you know. You have to, like, define the terms. You have to educate people of what's good before you just tell them to criticize.
Bravo. What's our timing, Sean? That's what I thought, because I do keep time.
I don't. How do you do that?
Well, I have a clock in front of me.
Oh,
it's
you
not
do.
Exactly
I
a
never
challenge.
Realized that.
Yes, but I just want to say something about. I thought about this the course of our podcast just now. I read, I watch, I listen, in the hope of learning.
Mm-hmm.
Period. That's it. And I hope we offer enough insights that people will benefit from them. That's why we do this. So what do you do if you hear a great point at the 20-minute mark of our podcast, but you keep listening?
Hmm.
Will you remember the great point that you heard 40 minutes before? The fact that you're not saying anything means it's a legitimate question.
Of course it is.
So people should take notes. Just of us.
That's what I always do with
people. Everything worthwhile. So if you hear something, just then record it on your usually a phone that you record things on. Record it. Or if you want to write it. But I feel bad when something really significant was said, and I know we're moving on.
We can talk about this more in another episode, but it is such an important point. I've been doing this for a while, but when I read books, people think I'm kooky. I highlight, underline all the important things, and then I type up notes. So literally for every single book I've read over the past year, yes, I have a Google Doc. And people think, like, what are you studying for an exam? No. It's because I know that I'll read the book, I'll learn so much, and I'll forget, and I'll go back and thank God I have the notes because I don't have to read the book
right.
All over again.
God bless you.
But I'll say this final thing. Right now in America, we're experiencing a crisis of not being reminded of our principles, of why America is great, what we stand for. I think in life, it's easy to do that. Like in life, you have to be constantly reminding yourself of what the things you've come to, the things you want, or you will just kind of be cast adrift. I'm trying to work on that journaling more with the things I'm working on, the things I learned. So it's a good point. Write it down.
Write it down.
Do you do that?
Yeah, I dictate it and then I look at what I dictated. Yeah. Like when I'm listening to a book. Mm. Absolutely.
I can't listen to books. I have to read them.
I have thoughts on that.
Okay, I'm sure you do. You can share your thoughts with me at julie@julie-hartman.com about anything, whether you listen or read to books. And I forward a lot of these emails to Dennis, so please do keep them coming. And then you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Julie R. Hartman. You can follow Dennis on Instagram at The Dennis Prager and Twitter at Dennis Prager. See you all soon. Take care.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.